Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown. Today I have the real pleasure to talk with the author of Polarized, Making Sense of a Divided America. The book was published by Princeton University Press in 2016, and the author is James Campbell. I have the real pleasure to have James Campbell on the phone with me right now. Jim, how are you doing?
Very well, and I'm delighted to be on your podcast. This is
I couldn't be more happy to have read the book and then met you for the first time at APSA. I've been so looking forward to having this conversation. Maybe you could just start us off with telling us just a little bit about where you are now and where you've been in the past. Give us a little bit of sense of who you are.
Okay, where I am literally right now is on Peaks Island, Maine. I am a professor at the University at Buffalo in SUNY, and I'm on research leave this semester. We have a home on Peaks Island. I'm originally from Maine. I went to Bowdoin College and Syracuse University for my graduate work, and then taught for a time at the University of Georgia in Athens, then moved to Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, took a couple years off there to be a program director at the National Science Foundation, and then and I've been at University at Buffalo since 1998.
Yeah, wonderful. It sounds like you're having a very enjoyable research semester, and it must be so pleasurable to have this interesting book out and read, and couldn't think of a more timely topic than the topic of polarization. Now, this is a phrase that gets thrown around so much, and we're going to do that today in our conversation. But let's start on the very basic level. What is the definition of political polarization? What are we referring to? Before we get to some of the complexities, what is it?
Well, I think it's conflict on political matters, perspectives, and issues that is unidimensional. So it essentially it collapses into an us versus them kind of politics. And so there's the intensity, the extremeness that's involved in polarization, but also the fact that it's not a cross-cutting sense of conflict, like a pluralistic situation would be. So there's a collapsing of issues into this single dimension. And in American politics, that's the liberal to conservative spectrum.
Now, as you're already beginning to allude to, whether polarization has or has not happened often has come down to the difficulty of measurement.
Right.
I wonder if you'd describe for us some of the major tools that we use to measure polarization.
Well, maybe before I get to that, I should mention polarization is a matter of degree, and this is one of the things that has bothered me in how it's been treated in the past in the literature, as though it was an on or off switch, that we're all polarized or all unpolarized. And I think it's quite clear that, you know, we aren't all, you know, it's not totalitarians versus anarchists here. We have, it's matters of degree in polarization. And so there's a variety of getting to your question, there are a variety of kinds of evidence that can be brought to bear on this. One is directly asking people to self-identify themselves as liberals or conservatives or moderates, or and giving them the option of saying they don't know. That's one kind of evidence that I examined. And we've seen a majority of Americans classify themselves as either liberals or conservatives, and that's been growing over time. And the a second piece of evidence are people's attitudes about the issues. And we haven't seen a growth of extremism in issue positions, but what we have seen is that people are more likely to hold liberal or conservative positions across a whole range of issues. That is, issue attitudes have become more highly correlated with one another. And it used to be the case that, you know, your allies on one set of issues might be your opponents on another. Now it's much more likely, again, that we simplified politics, polarization has simplified our political conflict to an us versus them. And that, of course, also intensifies the conflict in, at the same time. The third piece of, a third type of evidence that I looked at was what I call circumstantial evidence. That is, there are a lot of things we know for sure about American politics. And one of them is that the parties have become a good deal more polarized. A moderate public should have reacted to that in one way. A polarized public or a highly polarized public should have reacted to that in a different way. And so using things like the change in party identification, the strength of party identification, defection rates, split-ticket voting, and turnout, we can see that the public has is quite polarized and has become more so.
Now, much of what you're describing has this temporal piece to it, a suggestion that something has happened so that we can compare wherever we are now to something in the past. What's the right time period to think about this question of polarization? Is there a unit that you think makes most sense and maybe that should be used, or is there a unit maybe that has been used that would be the wrong, either too short or too long?
Well, I think the broader the better, because I think part of the problem of some past research is that it essentially truncated the amount of period that was being examined, and therefore missed some early changes that were important. So I try to be very comprehensive and broad in my search for and use of evidence. Unfortunately, a lot of the evidence only goes back to the early 70s, the self-reported ideology measures and a lot of the seven-point scale issue items only go back that far. This is where the circumstantial evidence can come into play and help broaden the horizon that we're looking at. So I what we've seen is that the American public was, by the ideology evidence, the issue evidence, and the circumstantial evidence, the public was fairly well polarized in the early 1970s. And this is what you would expect historically. The late 1960s was a very traumatic time in American politics. So it polarized a lot of people. And that just didn't fade away. The parties didn't represent it very well at the time, and it took them a long time to sort of regear themselves or realign themselves so that they would better represent it. So they came along later, and the public has become more polarized with that party realignment.
Now, briefly, before we get to the causes of polarization, I wonder if you could describe a bit, because you do so in the book, what are not the causes of polarization? There have been some suggestions that a couple of things are the cause of our current level of polarization that you say just aren't right. Would you briefly describe some of those?
Right. I think there's an idea that polarization has somehow been imposed on us, either by the system through the electoral system, by gerrymandering or different plurality rule systems and so forth, or that political contributors have been pulling politicians further to the right and further to the left and manipulating the system, or that activists are involved, or even presidents. There have been a number of books written about Presidents George W. Bush and also President Obama, suggesting that they were responsible for polarization. And of course, you turn to the political media, Fox News versus MSNBC and so forth. I think these were basically, all of them, were basically middlemen. That is, they were in part made or have some power because they are representing polarized constituencies. If there wasn't a conservative audience out there for Fox News, Fox News would have gone away and Rush Limbaugh would have gone away. There was an audience for it, and it fuels these what I call the middlemen or agitators fuel polarization, but they aren't really the cause of it. They are really more of they've been created by it and then kind of are cheerleaders for it. As we move forward, polarization of American politics is ultimately democratically caused or created. It's reflecting public opinion.
And in that way, you refer in the book to the staggered party realignment and a two-step dance between the parties. Right. What do you mean by this?
Well, what we've seen, this goes back to, I think, a terrific book by Ted Carmines, and Jim Stimson called Issue Evolution. And they found what I think of as kind of the Rosetta Stone of American politics, and that is in the 60s, between the late 50s and mid-60s, the civil rights issues used to cross-cut the basic social welfare dimension of the New Deal. That is, you had the Democratic Party was a more conservative party on civil rights in the 1950s. The Republican Party was the more liberal party. That changed. Those two dimensions essentially collapsed into one. In the early 1960s, and that was a crucial part of this staggered realignment. And so it was staggered in the sense that the initial shift favored the Democrats. You had Lyndon Johnson's landslide in 1964, but the ultimate shift, of course, helped the Republicans as the Republican Party eventually, over a long period of time, worked its way into the South. Back in the 1960s and 70s, and even into the 80s, there was the Republican Party in Southern states was minuscule, and so if you were an ambitious politician, a young person who wanted to make the politics a career, you went into the Democratic Party, not into the Republican Party. And so that slowed up the process. You had a lot of conservative Democrats along with in the South, along with Northern liberal Democrats. So you had a very heterogeneous party. And the same is true on the Republican side. And I think sometimes we miss that. There were a lot of liberal Northern Republicans and more conservative Western Republicans. And sort of this took a long time, really because of the South, to break that kind of unstable, unsustainable condition of having liberals and conservatives within the same party. And so this sorting out or realignment process took quite a long period of time, from the 1960s up through the 1990s.
But you make the argument that the sorting didn't happen at the same time on the same side, that if I read the book right, the Democrats went first and then the Republicans went next.
Yeah.
Is this what you mean by the two-step dance?
Yes. And what we saw is that, between 19, and this again goes back to the Issue Evolution book, what we saw is between the late 50s and the late 60s, a massive change within the Democratic coalition. In the 50s, Southern conservatives who were Democrats were able to counterbalance liberal non-Southerners within the Democratic Party. Because of liberal Democratic gains outside the South from the late 50s into the early 60s, the balance of power was broken within the Democratic Party, and the Democrats were able to be a much more liberal party. African-American voters, more liberal Republicans in the North and so forth, came in under the Democratic tent. But Republicans weren't able to really take advantage of that for some time until they built essentially a Republican infrastructure in the South. And then, you know, later on when Newt Gingrich came along and you had the big breakthrough election in 1994, that was the second step in this shift.
Now, let's talk a little bit sort of in conclusion about where we're at today and the level of polarization within each of the parties, defined in all sorts of different ways. What do you make of the asymmetric polarization argument that's out there? Is that consistent with the story that you're telling in your book, or is the sort of do you come down a little bit differently than that working theory?
All right. So the asymmetric argument is that the Republicans have gone wild. You know, that Republicans have gone way off to the right, and Democrats have maintained themselves as sort of a center-left party. And, you know, Tom Mann and Norm Ornstein's book makes that case. You know, I think the title of their book was "It's Even Worse Than It Looks." Great title for a book, by the way. But I think they're mistaken, and I think the circumstantial evidence, and also if you look at the ADA and the ACU scores of members of Congress, suggest a different something else happened here, and that is, you know, the Republican Party had been the minority party. The Democrats were the majority party back in the 50s and 60s and even into the 80s. Now, they were the majority party because they were more centrist. You know, combining Southern Democratic conservatives with Northern Democratic liberals made them the more centrist party. I mean, in an odd kind of way, kind of unholy alliance was moved that party closer to the center. And as a result, they dominated. And they controlled Congress, the House of Representatives, from the mid-60s all the way up to 1994. So they were centrist. The Republicans were further away from the political center and in the minority as a result. After the realignment, the parties are now near parity. Now, which means the Republicans gained ground. You don't gain ground in politics by moving further away from the center than your opponent is. So I think what happened here is that the Democrats moved further to the left and earlier, as in the two-step staggered realignment we were just talking about. And later on, the Republicans went further to the right. And now they're equally distant. You know, they are polarized. The parties are more clearly homogeneous ideologically and more polarized than they had been. But as a result of actually the Democrats moving further away from the center as they shed the Southern Conservative Democratic part of the party, and Republicans move further right, but they're both about equally distant now. Now, where the asymmetric argument I think has some merit is that Republicans have been behaving, in at least at elite levels, but I'd say also in the public, have been more angry, maybe acting more dysfunctional. I mean, they've been, you know, shutting down the government and so forth. And I think what that reflects is a frustration more than polarization. It's not that the Republicans are that much further right than Democrats are left, but that that Republicans are frustrated by not having seen much of the fruit of winning elections. And I think what they see is a center-right nation that's been governed to the center-left or even further for the last two decades. And that builds up a frustration. And where we see this is that it's a frustration not only taken out on Democrats and liberals, but it's a frustration taken out on their own party leaders. You know, John Boehner and the Republican establishment, and certainly this year we've seen it very clearly with the rise of Donald Trump. And it's anger, and it's anger at not winning on policy debates and sort of systematically losing. Even, you know, they can look all the way back to George H.W. Bush and reneging on his no new tax pledge, and all the way up to the Supreme Court twice with Justice Roberts bailing out the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And I think they see that their leadership has not been representing them very well. And so that's just that anger, not asymmetry and polarization.
Yeah, the book is so interesting. Again, the title is Polarized, Making Sense of a Divided America. The book was published by Princeton University Press this year. Jim, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Heath. I enjoyed it.